Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally, 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the cover story when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by now that something is wrong, dreadfully wrong, with the Ten Commandments, because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. I contend that that's a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? Now, that's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and they advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law, the Ten Commandments, into our federal Constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that's still teaching this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, commandments, penalties, and the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what the penalty to the law is in order to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the law of God, the common law, natural law, karma, or something else, it's automatic, and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and then download that free General Law CD package right there. georgegordon.org, archives page, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, we've been talking about the cover story. Now, remember, the cover story is the story that you and I develop so that we can excuse our foolishness, our ignorance, or our stupidity. So, why do you smoke? Well, you've got to have a cover story. And so you tell people, here's why I smoke. You never tell people the truth, because I'm a slave to nicotine. I'm addicted, and I can't give it up. It's too painful for me, and I can't stand the pain. So, you know, whether you're an alcoholic, or you're a smoker, or you're a wife beater, or whatever it is, you got to have a cover story. Well, hell, government does that. Business does that. I've explained to you in this series of programs a number of examples of how government and business and education and so on all come up with cover stories. Like the Iraq War, the cover story was, well, Saddam Hussein's got these weapons of mass destruction, and we got to go to war so we can take these away, make the world safe for democracy, and in the process we'll just take that 25 billion barrels of oil. The real reason for the war with Iraq is 25 billion barrels of oil. Now, if you think we're over there to make the world safe for democracy, dream on, but that's not the purpose. Now, as we go through life, Social Security, income tax, all of these events that transpire in our lives, there's a purpose behind them. Now, the purpose behind income tax doesn't have anything to do with financing government. Government doesn't need any taxes to finance itself. Hell, they can make the money. That's what they're doing right now. They haven't got enough tax money from us, so they just make it and spend it. Now, that being the case, there's an ultimate end to this. And the cover story is there's green shoots out there everywhere. You just keep up the faith. I mean, you may be unemployed for a year or two or three, but just stick in there. Everything's going to be fine. Green shoots are growing. The economy's coming back. It's slower than we wanted, but we got to stay the course. You know, give us some more time. Okay. Now, you people are going to throw the Democrats out and put the Republicans in, but it ain't going to solve anything. This train already left the station. You don't need to be concerned about the outcome. That's already pre-programmed. We're going into hyperinflation. Well, that's a bad solution in my view, but that's what Ben Bernanke and the powers that be have decreed. That's where we're going. And then when that runs its course, government will pay off its debts with this cheap money, and then when everybody is bankrupted, flat-ass broke, pregnant, and barefoot, and then we'll go into a long, extended period of depression, deflationary depression. Now, that's what we did the last time without the hyperinflation. This time they said, well, we're going to give you a bonus. Last time you had depression, but you didn't have hyperinflation. This time we're going to give you both. I think that's a mistake, but then, you know, I don't want to get in the way of the happiness and success of Americans. And I pointed out the other day, you know, you want to vote, and you're encouraged to vote. Get out and vote. If you don't vote, you don't have any reason to complain. And I came to a conclusion one day. I said, well, my God, is the solution to the world financial crisis voting? You know, if that's all we have to do is get out and vote and it'll solve the world financial crisis, God, we all need to get out and vote. I agree with you. But, boys and girls, we've been voting now for 200 and some odd years. If voting was the solution, we wouldn't have a global financial crisis because the voting would have already taken care of it, wouldn't it? So this problem came about while we were voting. So if while we were voting, we voted the bad guys in and they created this crisis, what makes you think that this election we're going to vote the bad guys out? See, you're only going to vote for Republicans or Democrats, and Uncle Esau controls both political parties. He's already set the agenda. So what difference does it make whether it's a Republican that takes your guns away from you or a Democrat? So it's six of one and a half dozen the other, and I pointed that out to you. Now, how many of you people out there are communists? Raise your hand. Every communist out there, raise your hand right there in your living room. Come on. See, no hands go up. That's the way it is. Every time I go out, thank God, I was in Salt Lake City one time. And then I was invited there by the Ford dealer down on South State Street. And then he moved the cars off of the showroom floor and set up chairs in there. Must have been 150, 200 people there. Probably most of them Mormons. He's a Mormon. He was there sitting in the front row with his wife and seven kids, nine of them in a row. And they were all spit-polished, too. Well, I mean, they're all wearing their finest clothes, and then they looked like they just came out of church, or maybe they were on their way to church, or maybe they thought they were going to church and that I was going to preach them a sermon. So I started off like I so often do. I said, how many people in here are communists? And nobody raised their hands. And I said, well, thank God, because I'm from Idaho. And let me tell you what's going on up in Idaho. We have a communist totalitarian regime going on up there, and we're practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in Idaho. And it's a done deal, and it's being promoted by our legislature and our governor. And the people looked at me, you know, like, who is this guy? Is this Mork from Ork? You know, is this guy spaced out on something? He must be smoking something really good here. So I said to the people there, I said, well, let's test this for a minute. Now, how many of you people down here, I said, well, let me tell you what's going on up there first. I said, up in Idaho, we pay an income tax. That income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. We got two taxes. We got a federal income tax and we got a state income tax. And then I said, how many of you people down here have an income tax? And everybody raised their hands. I mean, we're looking at the whole audience now. And I said, well, there you are. See, up in Idaho, we have an income tax, which is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. Then I asked, how many of you people in here file and pay income tax every year? Well, not everybody raised their hands because, you know, some of these people are tax protesters, but most of them didn't. You know, 75% of them probably raised their hands and they admitted that they paid income tax. I said, well, there you are. You're practicing the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, just like we do up in Idaho. I said, let me tell you another thing that's going on up in Idaho that maybe you've never heard of. We've got free education for all children in public school. That's the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. We have public schools up there. You have to send your children to these public schools. If you don't, they'll put you in jail. They'll take your kids away from you. The government has the power to take your children away from you if you don't send them to these public schools. And they're teaching sex education in public schools and socialism and communism and all kinds of things that are against our Constitution. And I said, now, how many of you people down here have public school? And I said, do they have public schools going on down here in Utah? And the people, they nodded their heads. Oh, yeah, we got public schools going on down here. I said, how many of you people here have attended public school? Everybody raised their hands. I said, how many of you people have children going to public school? About half the people raised their hands. I said, you see, there's two planks of the Communist Manifesto going on right here in Utah and up in Idaho. Let's just try another one. I said, up in Idaho, we have a central bank, and they issue paper money. And this paper money, and I pulled out my paper money out of my pocket, and I said, see this paper money? It says Federal Reserve Note right across the top of it. This is fiat paper currency. There's no gold in circulation. They're not following Article 1, Section 10 of our Constitution. They don't have gold and silver coins circulating in Idaho. They have these Federal Reserve Notes. They have paper money, fiat currency. It violates the law of God. It violates our Constitution, and that's what they're doing in Idaho. Thank God you people down here don't practice communism. I said, let me ask you this. Are there any banks down here? Everybody's nodding their head. John, there's banks down here. I said, well, how many of you people here have bank accounts in these banks? And nearly everybody raised their hands. Tax protesters, taxpayers, everybody raises. We all have bank accounts. Credit cards, have you got credit cards down here? Yeah, we got credit cards down here. They all raised their hands. I said, that's the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto. It calls for a central bank. I said, listen to this. How many of you people down here have Social Security numbers? And they all raised their hands. I said, well, that's the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto. So I read it to them. I read them the eighth plank. I went through all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto and those people down there in Salt Lake. Now, before I got to the 10th plank, about the 5th plank I got to, my host, the Ford dealer, and his wife and his children all got up and walked out. Never came back. You see, the cover story in America is that we're not communists. We don't practice communism. That's those bad guys in black hats in Russia and China that do things like that. We Americans wear white hats. We Americans practice the Constitution. We're different than everybody else in the world. Oh, no. I don't see that going on here in America. See, we used to practice the Ten Commandments here in the United States. We don't do that anymore. We practice the Ten Planks now. See, in our country, our founding fathers practiced Leviticus 19, 35, and 36, where God said, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag, and Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16, where he says, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Yeah, we used to do that. We had gold and silver coin. Practice the Ten Commandments. But then Franklin Roosevelt came along and he said, well, that's not a good idea, so let's abolish that. He called in all the gold and gave us paper for it, paper money. Then President Nixon cut us off from gold payments. You know, we've got your gold over here in Fort Knox. I don't know a guy by the name of Ron Paul in the Congress. He wanted to audit to find out how much gold's in Fort Knox. Federal Reserve's dragging their feet, jumping up and down, pawing the ground, biting the bushes. They don't want any audit. You know what that tells me? Either the gold isn't there or some of it's been heisted. Some of it's gone. Hell, if it was there, you'd say, bring them on. Pull your audit. Count all the bars. They're all there. So when somebody says, I don't want you to count the bars that are in there, that tells me, oop, some of them are missing. I'd go so far as to say, I'll bet you they're all missing. I bet that there isn't any in there at all. Zero. Zilch. Maybe some gold-plated titanium might be in there taking its place. So there's your story on the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. It's a cover story. A cover story. We, the people of the United States of America, are practicing communists. We practice communism just like the Russians and the Chinese and everybody else in the world. And so do you Canadians and Australians and New Zealanders, just like we do. So years ago, they told us that there was this great contest between capitalism and the freedom in the West and communism and the tyranny and slavery in the East. We called it the Cold War, remember? That was the cover story. The cover story was, it's the Cold War, and we got to spend all this money on defense and build atomic bombs and B-52 bombers to protect us from the communists, because they're going to take over the world, and they're going to impose upon us free education for all children in public schools and an income tax and maybe even a central bank with credit cards and paper money, and we got to spend billions and billions of dollars to save the world from communism. Well, that's what I heard when I was a kid. See, that was the cover story. Now, really what's going on over here in our public schools, they're teaching us to practice and to accept and to put all of these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto into operation. Today, our public school system, I mean, the people of America defend it like we invented it. You go out here and you try to take away Social Security from these people. That'll be a cold day in hell. You go out here and tell these people that we ought to abolish the income tax. We tried that in 1992 and 96. Remember this guy's name is Steve Forbes? He said, what we need to do is employ a flat tax. That's what tithing is. Tithing is a flat tax. Everybody pays the same amount. It's 10%. 10%. The people of America said, hell no, we're going to vote Bill Clinton in. Hell no, we're going to vote him back in. Bill Clinton said, hey, we should have an income tax, a heavy progressive income tax. And I'm just sitting here on the sidelines watching this, and I'm sitting here observing. It looks like to me the people of the United States of America want the income tax. They voted for it twice in 1992 and 96, and Bob Dole was running against Bill Clinton, and he was all in favor of the income tax. He didn't like that Steve Forbes guy at all. And the Republicans, they didn't like Steve Forbes either, so they nominated Bob Dole. So, you know, when I hear somebody say to me that we need to abolish the income tax, I say, oh, no, we've already had two elections. The people of America like it. They're communists. They practice the second plank, and they love it. I didn't like it, so I opted out. I said, hell, this thing ain't no good for me. I'm not suggesting that you ought to opt out of the income tax. I don't know what's good for you. Yesterday, I told you about the Social Security tax. I said, I don't think that Social Security is very good for me. I think I'll opt out of that, and I did. I opted out of it and took my money and put it someplace else. I'm very happy with my results, and I hope that you're as happy with your results with Social Security. God love you. Now, there's another little sidelight to this thing here called the 10 Flags to the Communist Manifesto, and it had to do here with a story called the Levitical Priesthood. I was over in Tennessee one day, and I was at Tupper Saucy's, and I was a speaker there at a convention. And so, you know, I don't know what day it was, 3 or 4 day convention, and I'm coming in here to the meeting. I got there about, 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, and I went into the restaurant to eat breakfast. It was being held at a big motel, at a restaurant. I was in there eating breakfast, And this guy came over to me and he said, "Mr. Gordon?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "May I sit down?" And I said, "By all means." And he sat down and he said, "I'm terribly sorry to interrupt your breakfast like this, but I just have to talk to you." He said, "I'm a preacher. I'm a minister. And I heard your speech the other day. And I just had to ask you, is it true that you practice the law of Moses?" And I said, yeah, that's true. And so he said, "Well, do you practice the sacrificial laws?" See, you see, when you say to somebody, "Well, I practice the Ten Commandments," they look at you like Judy Hartson, "I'm going to report you." Like that's some kind of a dirty word. That's a dirty program. I mean, if you said to somebody, "Are you practicing the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto?" No, I don't practice communism. What do you think I am? But if you were to ask them, "Well, do you practice the Ten Commandments?" "Well, God, no, I'm under grace. Like, I don't practice that. That's part of the sacrificial system. We don't do that. We're Christians." And that's what he told me, because I asked him, I said, "Well, don't you practice the sacrificial system here in Tennessee?" And he denied it. He said, no, 1,000 times no. We don't practice sacrifices here. We're under grace. We're Christians. Our sins are forgiven. Jesus nailed the law to the cross. I put my fork down and I said, "Well, I'll be darned. You just blow me over, because I'm a stranger. You know, I'm from a far, far land called Idaho, and I heard in Idaho that you people in Tennessee practice the sacrificial law, that you're practicing the sacrifices." And he looked at me like I was Mork from Ork. I said, "No, I'm really confused." I said, "You know, I was driving in this morning, and as I was driving down the freeway," because I was at a different motel, "as I was driving down the freeway, I crossed under this overpass, and up on my right side on the on-ramp to the freeway, I saw this car up here with lights on top of it. I think you call them highway patrol. And he had a thingy in his hand, and he pointed it at me. What do you think he was doing?" He said, "Oh, well, that was a radar gun, and he was checking your speed." I said, "Oh, checking my speed. What was he doing that for?" "Well, to see if you were speeding." And I said, "What difference does that make?" He said, "Well, if you're speeding, it's against the law." And I said to this guy, he's from Tennessee, I said to this Tennessean, I said, "It's against the law to speed in Tennessee?" He said, "Well, yeah, of course." I said, "Well, I'll be darned." I said, well, I guess I wasn't speeding because he didn't complain about my behavior, but let's suppose I was speeding. What would he do?" "Well, he'd come out and stop you and give you a ticket." "Give me a ticket? What do you do with the ticket?" He says, "You take it into the judge and you pay it." "You mean it's a fine?" "Yeah." "What if I didn't pay the fine?" "Well, they'd put you in jail." "Put you in jail?" I said, "You've got jails here in Tennessee?" "Yeah, of course we've got jails in Tennessee." "Who do you put in jail?" And then he said, "People that break the law, criminals go to jail." "You mean you take these people's property, you take their money, and you call it a fine, you put them in jail?" And he said, "Well, of course we do." I said, "Well, my God, that sounds like the sacrificial system to me. Let me ask you this question. These people that arrest you and take you to jail, are those people called policemen?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Do they arrest you and take you to jail for crime?" He said, "Yeah, that's crime." And he said, "Now, when they put you in jail, they lock the door and you can't get out?" "Yeah, yeah." I said, "Is this jail located in the courthouse?" He said, "Generally." I said, "Then when they take you out of the jail cell, do they take you into a courtroom inside the courthouse?" He said, "Yeah, yeah." I said, "Is there a guy in there by the name of Judge who wears a long robe sitting on a high bench called the bench, you know, a high place?" He said, "Yeah, yeah, it's up in the air. It's a high place up in the air. The judge sits on the bench." I said, "Is there a bar?" He didn't know what a bar was. I said, "Is there a fence that goes across this room with a couple of swinging gates in between?" He said, "Yeah, yeah, so that's called the bar." And I said, "Now, when you go through the bar and you want to go up and talk to this judge sitting on this elevated platform, do you have to have a lawyer with you?" He said, "Well, yeah, I guess you do. Most people do." I said, "Then when you get up there, do you plea?" He said, "Yeah, yeah, you enter a plea." And I said, "Then does the judge find you guilty of crime?" He said, "Yeah, most of the time." "Does that make you a criminal?" I asked. And he said, yep, if you're found guilty of crime, that's called a criminal. "Then does the judge administer a fine to you?" "Yep." "Or do you have court costs?" He said, "Yeah, yeah." "And then if you're not happy with this fine and court cost, can you appeal to your Supreme Court?" He said, yeah, you can appeal. And I said, "Is this system called the civil service?" And he said, yep, that's right. I said, "You know, we got the same thing going on in Idaho." "Same thing, exactly." And I've been talking to audiences all over America, and every place I go, I find that that's the same system. They got police, crime, jails, courthouses, courtrooms, judges, benches, bars, lawyers, pleas, guilty of crime, criminals, fines, costs, Supreme Courts, and civil service. Every single one of them have that. And I said, "You know, in the olden days, you know, way back in Jesus' time, the policeman was called the high priest's servant. Do you remember Peter cut off the high priest's servant's ear in the garden when they sent the high priest's servants out to arrest Jesus He said, oh, yeah, I remember that. And do you remember why they were arresting Jesus? Because he had committed sin called treason. Yeah. And then I said, they put him in ward. Do you remember that term in the Bible? They put him in ward. They locked him up. Yeah. Do you know where they locked him up? In the temple. He said, oh, yeah, that's right. And I said, then they took him up to the holy place. Do you remember that in front of Caiaphas? And they made inquiry of him. And Caiaphas was the high priest. Do you remember that? Yeah. And Caiaphas, the high priest, sits on an elevated platform called the altar. Yeah. And did you remember that there was a veil in the temple that was rent in two when Jesus died? Yeah. And then do you remember that there was an intercessor? You have to have an intercessor there. Yeah, I've heard of that. And do you know that they make a prayer in the temple? They pray to God? Yeah. And then they find him guilty of sin. They found Jesus guilty of sin. And then they crucified him. Do you remember that? Because he was numbered among the sinners. Yeah, he said, yeah, I remember that. And I said, do you remember in the Old Testament there when you sinned, you had to make a sacrifice called a sin offering? You know, you had to take a ram of the first year and bring him in, and they'd cut his throat, burn his blood, burn his fat, cut off the right front shoulder, and send it off to the Aaronic priesthood and keep the rest of it there. He said, yeah, those are called sacrifices. I said, yeah, one of them's called the sin offering, and the other's called the heave offering. And that heave offering, that was the rest of the animal stayed here, and the heave offering was that right front shoulder that went to the Levites. Do you remember that if you didn't like the decision, you could appeal that on the Day of Atonement to the Holy of Holies? He said, yeah, I remember that. And do you remember that was called the Levitical priesthood? So you had the high priest servant, you had sin, you got put in ward in the temple, brought into the holy place before the high priest, who sat on the altar behind the veil with an intercessor to make a prayer. They found you guilty of sin, which made you a sinner, so you had to make a sin offering, a heave offering. You could appeal to the Holy of Holies, to God himself on the Day of Atonement, and this is called the Levitical priesthood. He said, yep, I remember that. I mean, he should. This guy's a preacher. A preacher sitting at my table while I was eating breakfast, making inquiry out of me. And I said, you know, this Tennessee sounds more and more like the Levitical priesthood the more I get into it. So while we mull that one over, boys and girls, let me remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. So be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, live and direct. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, that doesn't mean that the authors or the publications are going to approve of that and endorse and recommend us. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour may be hostile, religious, political, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, we're talking about the cover story. Whenever you're talking to somebody and you back him in the corner and you ask him, hey, can you explain that? He has to have a cover story. You have to have a cover story for Iraq. You got to have a cover story for Afghanistan. So government has these cover stories, colleges and universities, medical institutions, doctors. For instance, you go to a doctor and you say, doc, I'm having this pain here in my stomach. Can you check that out? He does. He comes back and he says, oh, I've got some bad news for you. You've got cancer. colon cancer. Yes, sir. And then you say, well, doc, do you know what causes cancer? And he says, no. And you say, well, doc, do you have a cure for cancer? No, no. Well, doc, if you don't know what causes it, and then you don't know how to cure it, what do you propose we do? He says, well, for $100,000, we can treat it. We've got cut, burn, and poison, and we'll treat your cancer aggressively and do everything we can to save your life. And I said, well, what are you going to call a cure? And he said, well, if you survive for 5 years, we'll call that a cure. $100,000, huh, doc? Yep, $100,000, and boy, we'll put you right in the program. Let me ask you this. Let's suppose you have a car, and it ain't running too good. You run your car down to the DX, and you ask Mike, hey, Mike, come listen to my car. It ain't running too good. He listens to it. He says, yeah, boy, that ain't running very good. I said, Mike, do you know what's wrong with my car? And he says, no, I haven't got a clue. Mike, do you know how to fix this? No, I don't know what's wrong. I don't know how to fix it. What do you propose, Mike? And he says, pay me $25 an hour, and I'll work on your car. Would you leave your car with a mechanic that says, I don't know what's wrong with it, and I don't know how to fix it, but I got a treatment. I'll work on it. $25 an hour. I'll just work my heart out. And if we get it fixed, we'll call it a cure, and you can drive away. Now, I've never had anybody say to me that they would leave their car with a mechanic that says, I don't know what's wrong with it, and I don't know how to fix it. I have never met anybody yet that wouldn't pay $100,000 to a doctor who tells him plainly, I don't know what causes cancer and don't know how to cure it. But for $100,000, we got a treatment. So on the one hand, I don't know of anybody that would trust his car to a mechanic under those conditions, and I don't know of anybody that wouldn't trust a doctor under the identical conditions that I've just described. I'd say that's insane. That's my only conclusion. You got to be insane. But hey, listen, that's the way it works. And the cover story that we're dealing with here is the doctor says, well, you know, we're practitioners, and we're trying our hearts out, and we're working for a cure to cancer. We're just working our hearts out trying to find a cure to cancer. And someday we're going to find a cure to cancer. We haven't got a cure yet, but we're working on it, and we're going to find it someday. If you'll keep giving us enough money, oh, you mean I got to give you more? Yeah, we need $100,000 to treat it, but we got to have more donations to find a cure. How long have you been looking for this cure? Oh, for about 100 years. Have you found one yet? No? I don't know how much money they spent on it, but I'll bet you they spent $1 trillion looking for a cure to cancer and ain't found one yet. Now everybody knows you got 14 cures to cancer. What would you do if you found another cure to cancer? You'd have 15 cures to cancer. What are you going to do with the 15th one? You ain't using the 14 you got. What are you going to do with number 15, 16, or 17? Well, we're going to keep looking. And that's because, you see, the real reason for cancer is that it's a $500 billion a year business. And because it's a $500 billion a year business, we don't want a cure, because if we had a cure, it would wipe out our $500 billion business. I mean, come on, guys, just wake up and smell the coffee. We got a cash cow here, $100,000 a pop. Makes us money hand over fist. So we're going to keep looking for a cure, but we ain't never going to find one, because we don't want one. Cover story there is, hey, we're looking for a cure to cancer. God, we're just working our hearts out. Now, let's go back here to the Levitical priesthood of Tennessee. Remember when we took our break, I said, mull that over a little bit. Today, we have a guy running around on the road, and he's called a policeman. In ancient times, we had a high priest's servant. He was a policeman, but he was the guy that went out, and he enforced the laws. That's all, just like the policeman does today, except in the olden days, we called him the high priest's servant. What was the high priest's servant looking for? Sin, S-I-N, sin. What's the policeman looking for today? Sin. But we don't call it sin, we call it crime. That's what crime is, it's sin. Sin is the transgression of the law. Crime is the breaking of the law. So when the high priest servant caught you sinning, what did he do? He arrested you and put you in ward. He put you in the dungeon, in the temple. So today, the policeman, when he catches you breaking the law, committing crime, he takes you to jail in the courthouse. And this courthouse is where the high priest conducts his business. It's called the temple. In olden days, today, the temple is called the courthouse. And it's got rooms in it. And one of the rooms is called the holy place. Now, in this holy place, today we call it a courtroom. But in the holy place, there was a priest. He had a long robe. He was different than everybody else. He dressed in this long robe, just like judges do today. They dress in this long black robe. In olden days, they had a long white linen ephod. Today, they have a long black robe. Kind of identifies who the guy's working for, doesn't it? And this judge does his work off of a bench. That's an elevated platform called an altar in olden days. And so the priest works off the altar. The judge works off the bench, which is concealed behind the veil in the temple and behind the bar in the courtroom. To get in there, you have to have a lawyer in the courtroom. You have to have an intercessor in the temple. Jesus is your intercessor, boys and girls. Have you ever heard that word, intercessor? He's your lawyer. You can't go into the holy place without a lawyer. without an intercessor, to enter a plea. That's a prayer for relief. You know, today in our civil actions, paragraph 20 is entitled A Prayer for Relief. We go to court to pray for relief. We got a bitch with somebody, and we need to have that bitch taken care of, don't we? And so when we make this prayer for relief to the priest, the judge, who's sitting on the bench, the altar, he gives us an opinion. He finds you guilty. Guilty. That makes you a sinner if you're talking to the high priest. Makes you a criminal if you're talking to the judge. That's how simple that is. That's what a criminal is. He's a sinner. And so the judge says, well, you've got to make atonement for your sins, so we're going to fine you $100. You were out speeding or doing something, and then we're going to charge you court costs. Well, the fine is called a sin offering, and the court costs are called a heave offering in the Bible. That's all you're dealing with here. Now, the sin offering is the ram of the first year, and the heave offering is the two turtle doves. The two turtle doves go to the priest for officiating and doing the service. This is why you pay the judge when he marries you. You give him a service fee. You give him a heave offering. I remember when I got married by the justice of the peace, and he was expecting a little something, paid him $5, gave him a heave offering. Now, if you don't like the decision that you get, you can appeal. In ancient times, we used to appeal on the Day of Atonement to the Holy of Holies, and God would decide the matter. An example of that is in Numbers 35, where you have these six girls and an inheritance. There was a conflict over the interpretation of the law, so we had to have a judgment. God came down, gave us a judgment. Now, in ancient times, this was called the Levitical priesthood. Today, we call it the civil service. Now, boys and girls, today, you are practicing the sacrificial system. That's what it is. That's what you're doing. See how simple that is? But the cover story is, no, we're under grace. We're not under the law. We're not practicing the sacrifices. Oh, you're not? Well, they do in Tennessee, and they do in Idaho, and they do here in Missouri. And the last time I heard, they're doing the same thing in all the rest of the states here in the United States. And furthermore, I think they're doing that same thing down in Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, in Western Europe. That's called the Levitical priesthood of Tennessee. Isn't that just special? But our cover story is, no, we're under grace. We're not under the law. Oh, yeah? Now, a lot of times people tell me that they want to invest in stocks and bonds. And I've wondered about that because I don't invest in stocks and bonds, and I did a research project on that, and I thought I'd report that to you. See, the cover story on stocks and bonds is you want to invest for the long haul. You want to invest for a long time so that you can retire, so that you can make money, so that you can retire and live your life happily ever after, driving your Winnebago all over America, burning gasoline. That's the cover story. You want a safe, secure retirement. Well, God love you. I looked into that safe, secure retirement. Today we call them 401s and Kroger plans, and we've got half the people of America are invested in the stock market. Did you know that? Half of you people out there have your money in the stock market, dealing in unjust weights and balances, dealing in commercial paper, violating Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, nobody ever pointed to you and said, hey, you sinner, you criminal. And after all, you're trying to cut a fat hog in the back, and nobody can blame you for that. Everybody's trying to cut a fat hog in the back. But I actually did a little research to find out, how much fat do you think you're going to get off this pig's back? So I went back to the golden age of the Dow Jones investment, 1960. And I said, let's take $10,000 and invest it in the stock market, in the Dow Jones blue chips. We're going to invest it in companies, you know, like Xerox and IBM, General Motors, Ford, the biggies, the safies, the ones that pay the most. Now, if you can invest in the stock market and make 5% a year, you're called a genius. 5% compounded annually for 40 years, 1960 to 2000. Do you know how much money you'd make? Boy, you talk about cutting the fat hog in the back now. 5% compounded, starting with $10,000, comes out to $70,000 and change, $73,000 as I recall. Oh, my God. You invest $10,000 in the stock market. You cash out in 2000, and you made $73,000. Seven times your investment and change. That's genius. That's what all of you people want to do. Right? Sure it is. Everybody. And the cover story is, that is the American dream. Well, that and a house in the suburbs. So you want to buy a house in the suburbs, that's the American dream. You want to invest so you can retire. And you want to have a comfortable retirement. So you can drive your Winnebago around, burn up gasoline, touring America and looking things over. Well, I did the arithmetic on that, so get your pen and paper out here. Let me show you how that investment comes out. It is true. You made $73,000. It is true you netted $63,000 profit. But it is not true that you made a profit. You actually had a $3,800 loss. Yes, sir? You lost $3,800 worth of purchasing power. And here's the way this comes out. During the same 40 years, the inflation rate was 4.7%. So your net profit was 0.3% per annum compounded, for which you had to pay a capital gains tax of 28%. So when you paid your 28% capital gain tax, after you lost your purchasing power of 4.7% per annum, compounded annually for 40 years, your net loss, not gain, net loss is $3,800. That means in 1960, you could have bought you could have bought 10,000 loaves of hillbilly bread for a buck a loaf. But by the time you got out to, 19 or 2000, that same loaf of bread now cost you $7. Or put another way, bread back in those days wasn't a dollar. It was only about 20 cents. Loaf of white bread, 20 cents. See, you lost your purchasing power, and that's why I've said, you know, Americans can't count. And the cover story is, look at how much money you're making. I'll give you another example. 1945, I was a kid. My granddad was the superintendent, the yard superintendent at Northern Redwood Lumber Company in Corbeil, California. He got paid the phenomenal sum of $1.75 an hour in 1945, $1.75 an hour. And out of that great salary, he could reach in his pocket and pull out one thin dime, give it to me, and I could take it over to the ice cream shop, put it on the counter, and walk out with a double-decker chocolate ice cream cone. Yeah, that's right, a double-decker chocolate ice cream cone. Two scoops. All right, the other day, I was looking at the average wage, and it was $17.58 an hour. It's been adjusted up a little bit and then down a little bit, but today we're making about $17.50. That's 10 times what we were making in 1975. I went into the TCBY store, and I said, I want two scoops of chocolate ice cream. Well, it ain't ice cream. I guess it's yogurt, but, you know, essentially the same thing. I got two scoops for $2.35. So it went up from a dime to $2.35. So let's just run this one by us here. If you got $1.75, then you divide that by 10 cents, you get 17.5 ice cream cones per hour. My granddaddy worked for an hour, he got 17 and a half ice cream cones. Today, when I work an hour, I get $17.50. So I take my $17.50 and I divide that by $2.35 and I get 7.44 ice cream cones. 7.5 ice cream cones. So I went from 17 and a half ice cream cones down to 7.5 ice cream cones. I lost 10 ice cream cones in purchasing power, but I'm making 10 times more money. I'm making 10 times more money, but it costs me 23 times more to buy the ice cream. It's a net loss. That's what it boils down to, a net loss. That's what happens with stocks. See, you got nominal prices. That's the difference between $1.75 and $17.50. I would say to you, are you better off today, now that you're making $17.50 than you were in 1945, making $1.75? And you would say, of course I am. Thank God for Franklin D. Roosevelt. Thank God for the Democrats. Democrats can't count, but then neither can Republicans. They think Social Security is the greatest thing since sliced white bread. They got a third rail. You mess around with Social Security and you're messing with the third rail. Nobody's going to put up with that. I asked you this a little earlier. I said, well, which would you rather have, a penny a day doubled, you know, a penny a year doubled for 32 years or $25 an hour? And you all said $25 an hour is what we're looking for. And the difference is in the outcome. You get $1.5 million at $25 an hour, and $40 million at a penny a year, doubled for 32 years. And when I ask you the question, you're making more at $17.50 an hour than you were at $1.75. You say, "Damn right, we are 10 times more." But your 10 times more buys less than half as much. That's what happens to you in the stock market. Now, there's people making money in stocks. I don't deny it. They're called brokers and investment banking houses. God, they rake it in. That's Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Lehman Brothers. I mean, they're not losing any money. They're doing great. And you're investing this, and you're putting this into your savings account called your 401k so that you can retire. And you people can't count. That's what your problem is. So I teach a business school, and I bring people in here. You have to be pretty smart. And you got to be something less than 160 IQ and something over 70. Once you get too smart, you can't learn. And if you get too dumb, you can't learn either. But, you know, if you're just an average Joe Sixpack, and you can still walk, talk, and chew gum all at the same time, you can learn how this works. I mean, I'm not telling you something that you couldn't figure out yourself. Get your Sharpie 1197 G3 out and start punching the numbers over there, and pretty soon you can get behind the cover story. It's true, they're paying us more dollars per hour, but the dollars have depreciated, and now, because of inflation, we're actually earning less today than we were in 1973. We haven't had a raise since 1973. Goldman Sachs has. I mean, all those brokers that are working, all the politicians, you know, they get cost of living adjustments. Now, Social Security is not going to give you a cost of living adjustment, but I'll bet you the Congress of the United States is going to get a cost of living adjustment this year. So I thought I'd point that out to you. That'll help us get behind the cover stories. All of these cover stories are lies. That's what the bottom line is. And these lies harm us. A guy that's making $17.50 an hour today, he thinks he's doing pretty well. He's actually doing poorer than he was before, but now he's got his wife working. And now with both of them working, they can just about get by until one of them loses his job, and then, oh my God. And when both of them lose their jobs, now they're on unemployment. Now they're on the dole. Now they can't make the mortgage payment. Can't pay for the car. Then pretty soon they end up out on the street and they say, my God, we were comfortable, middle class, living our lives, doing our things. I was dealing cards down at Harold's Club, and then my husband was out here working construction in Reno, and we were just making money and doing great, and now we're both, this is an actual case, this man and his wife, now they're living in a little camper trailer, you know, one of them 16-footers, and wondering what the hell they're going to do when their unemployment checks run out. All right, so tuck that one away in your heart and remember the cover story. The cover story is all of the examples that we've covered and hundreds more, where we believe that. We're told a story and we believe the story, but it's a lie. It's hypocrisy. It's a lie. And you know, we can uncover that if we'll just do the arithmetic and start thinking for ourselves. It's called reason, logic, and common sense. Hey, I'm out of time again. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States or heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website, which is georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.